The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Okay, Tov, Shavua Tov. I noticed that the trial of Malka Leifer has opened in Melbourne today, 13 years after the initial charges were laid against her. We know the story about how she escaped justice for so many years in Israel, was ultimately extradited to Australia, and finally the trial has begun today. So obviously we will be watching that with some interest to see what evidence is led and how that all transpires.
Yep, amazing, and at least it's finally getting somewhere, but not easy for the victims after such a long time. Four rockets have been intercepted by the Iron Dome after being fired into Israel from Gaza on each of the past 4 days. Why has this rocket fire increased over the last few days? Is there something going on?
Well, there were reports that try to somehow link at least some of the rocket fire to the fact that exactly 16 years have now passed since Israel disengaged from Gaza in 2005. It was the anniversary on Sunday of the Gaza disengagement. But I think in reality, the rocket fire is much more closely linked to the recapture of these prisoners who escaped from Gilboa prison, these maximum security prisoners. Four out of the six prisoners who escaped from Gilboa have been recaptured. And what's happened is I think that the security situation has deteriorated when it became clear that those prisoners have been recaptured. Two prisoners were captured on Friday, apparently in the Nazareth area, and a further two prisoners have been captured on Saturday, also around the area, not far from there, within 30 kilometers of the Gilboa prison itself. A lot more information also coming out about the prison escape and indeed the response to the captured. It's so fascinating to see how PR is just almost the most important thing, because pictures were released by the Israeli establishment of two of the prisoners who were recaptured in Nazareth. The original pictures that were released showed quite a disheveled kind of situation. Two people who were clearly not in good shape. And within a very, very short period of time, those same pictures were re-released by the Palestinian media, this time showing smiling, happy, strong-looking people to try and somehow send a certain message to the Palestinian street about the state of these prisoners. They clearly were not in good shape. And the notion that they'd been assisted from outside at the time of their escape now seems to be put to bed, and there is now the view that they didn't have a getaway car waiting, and they didn't have all this help and support from outside at the moment that they escaped, that they really just ran away on foot. And I think that was supported by the fact that this farmer was the one who saw them running through his fields, and he was the one who raised the alarm initially when the escape took place. But the whole story around this particular escape is definitely going to be investigated in much, much more detail. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has weighed in, saying that there were just so many issues, so many violations of rules, so many things that weren't carried out correctly that really need to be corrected. And of course, since then, many security prisoners have been put into isolation in order to try to somehow, first of all, avoid a similar thing happening in the near future. In the meantime, I understand another tunnel has been discovered that has been dug in the prison, and so that has now been taken care of. But also, the fact is that it really created a lot of unrest within Israel's prison service, and so there was the necessity just to calm all of that down. At the moment, still looking for the two remaining prisoners, but the good news is that the main protagonist Zubaydi, who was the head of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, and he is considered to be the more senior, the most senior out of the group of six, has been captured. The moment the news was released that these prisoners were finally recaptured, the Gaza rockets began to fly. The first announcement coming that the first two prisoners were released was accompanied by a rocket. When Zubaydi and Mahmoud al-Arida, who were the two who were found in the village of el-Ghanem in the early hours of Saturday morning, when they were found, another rocket was released. And of course, each time a rocket is fired from Gaza, the IDF responds with fire into Gaza Strip in order to carry out the policy which still is in existence, which means that no rocket fire from Gaza will be ignored, and that every attempt to fire a rocket into Israel and every rocket that is fired into Israel will be retaliated against in the form of the IDF carrying out attacks against Gaza. So not only were the rockets actually intercepted by Iron Dome on each of the four occasions, but in addition to that, the IDF has retaliated, and of course that tends to create a tit-for-tat situation where the retaliation is then met with another rocket fire, which is met with retaliation again. It's interesting that Foreign Minister Yair Lapid has tried to set out a plan, which he calls the plan to defeat Hamas in the Gaza Strip through economic and diplomatic means. So what he's trying to suggest is that if we work to strengthen the economy of Gaza, it will in turn bring us security. I can see where he's going on that. We have certainly tried those tactics in the past. There is a notion that economy means security. Of course, there are some people who would not necessarily agree with that. I just wonder what the listeners think about that.
34519 or 0618951019. Do you think it would be a good policy to strengthen the economic situation in Gaza? Would that move, would that help move towards peace? I'd love your thoughts on that. This story has upset me tremendously, and that is a spike in corona infections is feared following the return of pilgrims from Oman over Rosh Hashanah. So last week we reported, I think it was Friday, I raised the issue that in fact there were a whole bunch of false fraudulent negative tests that had been used in order to come back into Israel. Those people, I believe, are facing criminal charges. But now we're seeing, what, like 1,600 new cases coming from Oman alone. Give us the sense of what's going on here.
So it's traditional for certain followers of the Breslev Hasidim to go during Rosh Hashanah to pray at the tomb of Rabbi Nachman of Breslev. And this year was no exception. 25,000 people. 25,000 people went from Israel to Oman in order to spend Rosh Hashanah there praying at the grave, at the tomb of Rabbi Nachman. And so far, we understand that 1,500 people from those 25,000 have already returned with positive coronavirus tests. Now, think about the fact that there are dozens of shuls, places to pray, all of which are tightly packed, set up only for the moment of Rosh Hashanah, because in general, Oman is a relatively quiet kind of a rural type of place, which is not built for an influx of 25,000 people over the course of a few days. And so inevitably the facilities, the infrastructure in Oman is stretched beyond capacity. Inevitably the people who come to pray there are tightly packed. Apparently no masks were in sight. We do understand that the Israel's coronavirus czar was actually sent to Oman to witness what was going on there. It didn't help, however, that none of the rules were being adhered to, and he was certainly unable to insist upon the rules being adhered to. So far, as I said, 1,500 people already returned with the virus. As many as 3,000, they think, could still test positive in the coming days. And the big fear is that because the Yom Kippur falls within the period that people are supposed to be in quarantine after having returned from Oman, that a lot of these people who return from Oman will simply ignore the quarantine restrictions that have been placed upon them over Yom Kippur and will go out and will go to a shul and will pray in a shul over Yom Kippur without any regard for the fact that they should be in quarantine. And so there is a lot of concern that during the course of Yom Kippur, people might be infected as a result of people who've returned from Oman and who should be in quarantine but are not adhering to the restrictions. And of course, your story about those people who decided to falsely present negative tests, even though they may not have been negatively tested or may not even have been tested at all. They may have been positively tested, I don't know. But this is definitely a criminal activity, and people are going to be criminally charged. And it's just astonishing how simple it is to go online and to download whatever negative test you need that can be presented. Clearly, it wasn't as convincing as all that, because the false tests, the fraudulent tests seem to be picked up very quickly. But that people are prepared to go to all types of activities, to search such extreme lengths in order to present fraudulent tests is beyond my level of understanding. It really is. And just linked to the whole corona situation, on the one hand, there were reports that Rosh Hashanah didn't really contribute to a major spike in cases in Israel. I mean, obviously, let's separate the Oman travelers out for a moment. Didn't really contribute to a major spike in Israel. There was a fear that it would do. But again, you know, following the report yesterday from the US CDC, which spoke about the number of people who have corona who are seriously ill, who have been unvaccinated, as opposed to those who have been vaccinated, the Israeli authorities decided to release Israeli information about what's happening between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated groups. And we understand that there are just so many people who are seriously ill who are unvaccinated. Out of the 175 ventilated patients, two-thirds are not vaccinated. Now, the anti-vaxxers will turn around and say, but it means that one-third are vaccinated. All true. And so it's not necessarily about the two-thirds and the one-third, but you need to bear in mind that the population of unvaccinated people in Israel is a much, much smaller number than the population of vaccinated people. So when we say two-thirds of a relatively small population are being ventilated, as opposed to one-third of a relatively large population being ventilated, then it goes to show that the percentage of the unvaccinated people is just so much higher when it comes to people who are seriously ill, people who are being ventilated, people who are on the extracorporeal membrane, the ECMO machines. Apparently, 90% of people who are being who are on the ECMO machines, and we understand that they're 27 at the moment. So the statistic says that 90% of them, that's like 25, are people who are unvaccinated. It is just glaringly obvious.
It's interesting
because vaccination makes a big difference.
Yeah, in the Washington Post this weekend, they actually had an article on this. It was very, very interesting. They apparently call it a Simpson paradox. So when you look at the stats exactly as you've done, and you say, "Oh, but hold on a minute, one third of people in hospital are vaccinated. That means it's not working." What you have to look at is exactly what you're saying: is the number of people vaccinated versus unvaccinated, and also the age groups and things like that. So it is, right. it's apparently called the Simpson paradox, and it's a statistical illusion, apparently, that can almost give the impression of it being completely incorrect, which is very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it can be very, very misleading, and it's interesting that the US, which has really gone out of its way to enforce freedom of choice, some states have enacted that people are definitely not required to wear masks if they don't want to, and people are definitely not required to be vaccinated if they don't want to, and that people's freedom of choices should be respected in every possible manner. And then we've got President Joe Biden, who said every single federal state worker needs to be vaccinated, not tested twice a week, not unvaccinated. Everybody has to be vaccinated. This is the country which is really trying to preserve freedom of choice, and yet this executive order has come down, and it comes from somewhere. It doesn't just pop up out of nowhere. There is a good base and good reason why such orders are being enforced. We've seen it in Israel as well, where the courts have also supported the fact that employees are required to be vaccinated. So this is something I think that we're going to see more and more of in the near future.
Unfortunately, it is where we have to leave it. I wanted to discuss this apartment building that collapsed, but we can talk about that tomorrow. We can follow those stories tomorrow.